Digital 410 proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Henry Sledge.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. And tonight, we're getting back to the roots. We're going all the way back to 2018 when I started this podcast. It's just me and some lovely, wonderful living historians and people with passion for the project of World War II and keeping the memory alive. Jeff is out. Henry's working on his book. You guys know the deal. But real quick, I know Henry's been gone for a while and you guys are wondering where he's at. Little inside football for you. I've been working on a video diligently for almost 2 weeks now. We sat down because we know that The Pacific and the Band of Brothers is streaming and blowing up on Netflix. We're hoping that brings a new generation of young cats who's interested in the hobby of World War II, and more importantly, the history of one Eugene Sledge. And so we thought better, why not, to do our very first YouTube reaction video on Henry Sledge reaction to HBO's The Pacific. And so as What's the Scuttlebutt listeners, you guys have heard a lot of these stories, and so we made the video to focus on hopefully new cats who are searching Google to try to find everything they can about The Pacific. And so you'll hear the stories about how the show came to be, how Henry's family provided details, and how some of it didn't make it to the show. But anyhow, if you're a fan of the HBO's miniseries The Pacific and you want to hear Henry's full-blown, unedited thoughts, critiques, and passion for the series and how they portrayed his father, you'll want to tune in. Hopefully that'll be out sometime next week. But enough of the plugs. Let's introduce our guest. Joining us, you know, it's funny, the wonderful world of Facebook. We've been Facebook friends for quite some time, but never so much as sent each other a message. He's a living historian. His wife is into the project as well, into the passion. They have a wonderful, wonderful company, I guess you would say, Victory Productions, where not only do they participate in living history, but they take fantastic photos to help keep it alive. Joining us now is Joe and Patrice Bemis. How y'all doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for being on. Real quick, you guys are North Carolina, right?
We are.
Yep.
Did that storm impact you guys at all? The one that just passed, what, a couple weeks ago?
We had a little bit of wind, but that was about it.
Only reason I ask is because I watch a YouTube channel called Cars and Cameras where these guys rebuild old trikes and dirt bikes from the 70s and 80s, and one of them lives in North Carolina on the coast, and like his whole property flooded. So I didn't know how bad it was. I figured I'd ask you guys since you were there. And being in Florida and someone who just lived through my sixth hurricane, I just want to make sure you guys came out all right.
Yep. Yeah. We're pretty far north, so that didn't really affect us much.
Great news. So I want to start in the beginning, really. Joe, give us a brief history of you, how you got into the field of World War II, and more importantly, living history, and then we'll ask the same of Patrice, and then we'll talk about the development of your photography company, and we'll go from there.
All right, right on. I went to school in Asheboro at RCC. Got my degree in commercial photography there. And right out of school, I started working at a studio in Greensboro. And while I was working at that studio, I developed Victory, I guess. It just started off as just getting a bunch of people together with artistic talents and just producing things, you know, mostly photo series and, you know, just art. And then I started getting into the pinup and started just, you know, focusing on that. And at that time, pinup was really big and I wanted a unique look. So I started making all my pinups look like Varga and Petty and, you know, like drawings.
Sure.
And then that led into discovering pinup nose art.
Yep.
And really getting into that. And at the time, my brother, Robert Bemis, he just started doing Revolutionary War reenacting. And I started going to events with him and photographing and discovered two of my main passions, history and photography. I could just combine them both. And so that's how I was introduced to the community, and through just going to event after event and taking photos and, you know, just getting to know everybody, it just kind of blossomed from there.
You know, that's interesting because most guests I have on here, it's, you know, which one came first, the chicken or the egg? Usually World War II comes first, and then they figure out a way to work their photography passion into it. But it seems like for you, photography came first, and then through the travels of, as you said, the pinup and then your brother, that you found World War II through photography and looking for subject matters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And World War II has always been a passion, you know, even from a little kid growing up, you know, watching war movies with my grandfather, you know, like Eagle's Dare and,
yep,
you know, yeah, and the Eagle has landed, Force 10 Navarone, all that stuff. And it just, it's always been there. I've always had this passion for World War II. You know, it's even crazy. Like, my brother was born on September 1st, and Germany invaded Poland September 1st, 1939. And I was born on August 14th, 1978, and the war was over. I mean, that was VJ Day.
See,
and we're both 6 years apart. And all of our family's been military, and it's just always been there.
See, if your mom would have put forth the extra effort, squoze you out on the 7th, you could have been born on the D-Day of Guadalcanal, August 7th, 1942. But no, you just missed it by 7 days. Patrice, how did all this come into your life?
Well, Joe and I met years ago through some mutual friends, and we both had gone to school for photography. I went to SCAD down in Savannah, Georgia, and again, it was kind of like a family connection. My dad used to take us to the Revolutionary War site, like at Guilford in North Carolina, which was always a big reenactment. And my mom and my dad are both in the arts, and they both had a passion for photography. And I grew up with some friends that my mom worked at a newspaper in Charlotte, and they kind of turned me on to the dark room and all the photography and everything. So when Joe and I talked about our passion for photography, the history of it and kind of going back to, you know, the kind of analog sense where everything is manual and you have to just, you're shooting on raw film and you have this grain and this really cool aspect. It seemed to really lend to the reenactments because that was what these people were doing in real life. And so we were capturing those images on camera and on, and a lot of times on period correct cameras.
Nice.
So it was just easy. It was just kind of like an easy combination of the two. Now, Joe's really the history buff. I don't know a whole lot of the history, although I'm like constantly learning at all the reenactments that we go to and all the research and everything that Joe does and that I do for some of the events that, you know, I participate in. But it's really just been about capturing these images in the most unique but authentic way.
Okay, Joe, I hate to do this. I'm going to push you to the corner because we've always have dudes on the show. We very rarely have females on here to do living history. Being a female who grew up with a father who's interested in the hobby, going to those events, what was that like for you, you know, as maybe your contemporaries were doing elsewhere? I mean, it sounded like you guys were roughly my age, so they're more interested in the things that were going on when we were growing up, and here you were going to some hot field watching a bunch of guys in wool and shooting black powder rifles, pretending to be dead in the hot North Carolina sun. How was that growing up?
Well, I mean, growing up, I'm not sure I was exposed to it very much. If there was something local, then that was when we would go and kind of experience it. Because not only was it like a learning experience, but it also helped us kind of just get creative.
Sure.
I'd say now I'm just like my excitement for going and seeing how everyone portrays their own passions in the hobby is just grown tenfold. Like meeting everyone that we know through all the groups that we go and do events with. I mean, I just researching the female aspect also has just made it so incredibly enlightening, and like my curiosity is sparked. And then when I find a new, really, you know, awesome chick that's just done some really awesome stuff. I just can't help but feel like I want to connect to that in some way. So I'd say, I mean, I kind of wish I was exposed a little bit more as a child. I think that I would have probably gotten that passion like Joe did at a young age. But I'm really happy that we met and we got into this hobby and met so many awesome people, and that our, like, we're just expanding our knowledge tenfold, like, every day that we're around these people.
And it's very important for you to be part of this hobby, because I'm probably, I would assume, maybe you felt the same way when you first started learning it. Oh, okay, female role in World War II. Let me guess. I can be Rosie the Riveter or a nurse. But then you start finding out all of the different things that women contributed to the war effort and all the different topics that you could set up displays on, you can create impressions on. Were you surprised at all about, maybe not surprised so much of the amount of contribution that women made, but maybe the lack of coverage of those contributions in pop culture?
Oh, definitely. I mean, but coming from a somewhat open-minded background with my family, I mean, I think that we always knew that there was probably not as much exposure for women in history. But yes, like every day that I research another woman that's done something in a different role, I mean, it's just amazing to find all of these different stories. And like, I can just expand all of my kits, all of my, you know, impressions. I mean, we joined a British group actually, and now I get to be a dispatch rider and ride motorcycles around and do all sorts of other stuff. So, I mean, that there's really a lot out there in the World War II scene that can involve women, and it's not just, you know, some plain Jane kind of aspect. So,
well, we're going to talk more about it later on the podcast, but as I was opening the show, I was hinting about how there's hopes, at least for me, that the new revitalization of Band of Brothers in the Pacific, because when those shows aired originally, they brought a lot of interest in the community, a lot of interest in World War II, and brought along a lot of younger cats into the hobby. But maybe we'll see something similar with females when Kate Winslet's new movie comes out about Lee Miller, the movie Lee, about the, you know, the photographer during the war. And it'd be interesting to see if we notice an influx of young girls and women coming to events because maybe they saw this movie and like, oh, wow, as I was saying before, we did have more contribution than just X and Y. And it'll be interesting to see if that helps lead to an influx in female participation or just visiting living history events.
I would hope so. I mean, I would hope that anyone that was interested in the history would just come out and at least try to experience it. I actually have, my first impression was based off of Lee Miller, just because of the photography connection. You know, I'm excited to see this movie that's coming out, just to see, you know, how well they really express like everything that she did, which was just so captivating in itself. So, I mean, you really just need to look back at the roles that the women played, and I can guarantee that you're going to find something that's going to be very impressive and just kind of exciting. So I hope that more women come out.
I got to ask you too. I'm sitting in a room. I'm currently staring at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 M1 helmets. Do either one of you have a T-14?
For years, Joe's been trying to build one.
Really?
He's kind of collected some shells so that we can maybe cut them up and weld them back together. So,
for those of you playing along at home who don't know what a T-14 helmet is, think of an M1 helmet where someone lopped off the front and they kind of made it like a knight's visor, but instead of covering your face, it brings the brim up so that you can look through the viewfinder on your camera without being obstructed. And they're very rare. I'm looking on Top Pots, apparently made a run of them for a while, but I only know one person who has one, and he, too, recreated it. Now, I'm going to blow your all's mind for a second. It's going to mean absolutely nothing to anybody under the age of 28 or 35. I can load 35 millimeter in a load canister in less than 18 seconds. I wasted 8 semesters of high school taking black and white photography only to have it replaced by digital cameras. I'm sure you guys feel the same way.
Yeah.
Hey, we feel your pain, man. That's a good thing. Patrice is all film and digital, so.
Because
at events I primarily do film, and Joe primarily does digital. But we also go back and forth. We share in the digital and the in the film aspect. So
my dream after high school up till probably 2003, 2004, is like, I got to get me a overhead, oh, damn, I even forgot the name of it now because it's been so long. The overhead, not projector, but
the enlarger?
Yeah, overhead enlarger, get me the fix, the stop bath, the developer, make me a dark room in my bathroom. And it's like, I think I found one at the Goodwill about 7 years ago and the thing was beat. I'm like, there's no reason to do it. And so I'd been doing IT work for 20 years. And for the last 18, I had about 6 or 7 veterinarian clinics and they're all moving to digital x-ray machines. But every once in a while, I'd walk into the old one and you would smell the developer fixing the stop bath from where they were manually still developing their x-rays. And that smell just brought me right back to that dark room in 1996. I'm like, wow, that's a smell you'll never forget.
Never. We used to do lock-ins in college, and those were the nights, man. Just hardly slept, you know, spent hours in the dark room just working. Oh, I miss those days.
So you could probably appreciate the fact that my freshman year, my photography teacher gave us a 10-minute dissertation on the proper way to apply masking tape to the back of your cardboard when putting the mat on your photo. He literally gave us a 10-minute dissertation on the proper way to pop the glue bubbles to properly apply the mat so your photo doesn't slide in it. Days of yore. And so when did you guys end up meeting? I know you touched on it briefly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we knew of each other, like, in the area that we lived in. We kind of shared some of the frequent watering holes. And we knew that we both did photography, but we really kind of met back up and started going to events and photographing them together around, like, 2018.
Yeah. I think our first event we shot was the Warbirds over Monroe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was 2018. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
How is the reenacting community in North Carolina? Is it big? Is it dwindling a little bit? People aging out? Are you guys replenishing with young cats?
I would say a little bit of all of the above. You know, it comes in waves, you know, like everything does.
Sure.
You know? And it definitely helps when certain, you know, like, movies are released or something like that. It gets, you know, when that's when the influx of new people kind of tend to show up. And, you know, like, when public interest is generated.
Yeah.
And then when it's not, it's the people that, you know, the community that's been there forever. So it's, you know, the people still have the passion. It's just, it's not the lack of passion. Sometimes it's the lack of time.
Yeah.
And as you get older, life happens and you just don't, you know, you still love it. You still love the people. It's just sometimes you just don't have time.
Isn't that the truth? I worked in radio for about 7 years and I was a producer of a talk show. And that show, they're still on the air now. The two hosts have been working together in the same time slot since 1998, which is unheard of in terrestrial radio. But one of the hosts had a band for the longest time, played local shows, would open up for some of the bigger names. And their band broke up. And as he got older, listeners would call him like, Mark, how come you're not in a band anymore? He's like, you ever try to get 6 47-year-olds together to do something at one time when they all have kids, families, jobs, you know, obligations? It's next to impossible. And living history is kind of the same way because sadly, due to the cost of entry, not that there's a cost of entry, but the cost of the uniforms, this is not a young man's game. And that's one of the frustrating things. I get why people say it, but on Facebook all the time, oh, these guys are too old. Well, that's because 16-year-olds can't afford it unless they have well-to-do parents.
Yeah.
And
true.
One of the guys, like, my first impression was a Marine Corps impression. Total logistical mistake on my part. When I put it together 10 years ago, there was nobody doing Marine Corps stuff. But I found a group that was doing a local show. They did First ID. And the guy who ran that group, he's now with World War II Armor. His name is John Thompson. And he was a police detective at the time, and his son was in the hobby, and he was. And one of the things he did, which I thought was fantastic, and sadly, when he closed down his division of First ID and went to World War II Armor and focus on that, he actually, him and his crew would go do events at museums and other places and charge a modest appearance fee, but he would take that money and buy uniforms and helmets and ammo. And then when we were at events and local kids, 16, 17, 18, showed interest, well, less 18, but more like 15, 16, 17, he would talk to their parents and like, hey, is this something, oh, your son's interested in World War II? Yes. And his whole thing was, is you show up, I'll outfit you, because kids have a short attention span. And parents don't want to go dropping $4,000 on an outfit that they're not going to do 6 months from now. And you show up, I'll outfit you. And as you keep coming back, just slowly go online and buy a shirt. And the next time I'll provide the trousers, everything else, you wear your shirt. And then the guys who fell into and loved it, they would slowly start buying stuff as they can afford it and stop using his stuff. And he would bring, he'd bring young cats in that way. But, like down here in Florida, it's been a little rougher since 2020. Now you guys brought it up and I noticed it on your photos here in Florida. You know, we got the airborne guys, we have the infantry guys. I know one or two guys who do glider riders. And whenever I go up to Georgia for an event up in Lakeland, there's a couple of guys who show up there who do British infantry. But you guys are talking about how you fell into a British group, and I've noticed that in your photos. That is awesome to see, because you usually don't see that at events. It's usually Americans and Germans and maybe a couple of French partisans running around. The fact to see that you guys, and your impressions are fantastic. I love to see that you guys are doing British airborne and British infantry, and then your Navy impression, which you rarely see as well. What led you guys to do those, I don't want to say unique, but less than, mainstream impressions?
It really started off just meeting this great group of guys that were just incredible. I mean, you were talking about guys that just kind of would buy kits or like pieces of kits or whatever and have these big, huge collections of stuff. And then they would just help all the younger kids kind of outfit themselves for a period of time.
Sure.
We have like five of those guys.
That's fantastic.
All they do is like for years and years and years, they've been collecting all of this stuff. And when they find someone else that's interested in it, we have one guy in our unit that could outfit you for about 7 different impressions. Nice. It doesn't really matter,
Yeah.
And I know for me, I'm like a total gearhead. I've been working on cars since I was like 16. And I also love motorcycles. And, I had about 3 until recently. But the British thing was a lot easier to get into because it was a lot cheaper than a WLA. I ended up finding a British motorcycle. And so we have a 1940 BSA.
Nice.
So that was just a really awesome way for me as the female entity in the unit to participate and kind of do the mechanics thing and just really get into it, make it in, have this kind of hands-on experience with it, aside from just kind of being on the sidelines and doing like administrative stuff like a lot of the other female people do. I mean, like, I know that that's important too, and it can be really fun, and we have other friends that do nurse corps and things like that that you can really get your hands into. But for me, I kind of always been one of the guys, so I just wanted to get my hands dirty and turn some wrenches.
What's the shift pattern on a 1940s BSA? Is it 1 down, 3 up? How many gears is that?
It is, so on an American bike, it's 1 down, 3 up.
3 or 4 up, yep.
On a British bike, it is 1 up, 3 down.
Sure, why not? I mean, they always do everything backwards anyhow.
Everything's backwards, and it's on the other side. So.
And instead of putting it in neutral to turn the key, you got to put it in reverse.
Yeah, exactly. So there is no reverse. Might as well, right?
Yeah, might as well. Joe, how tall are you?
6'1".
Okay, you fall in my camp. It's next to effing and pop. I'm 6'5". And I've been to events where somebody will be getting rid of their hobby or closing down, and I've gone to warehouses where they have all original stuff. It's like, there ain't a goddamn thing in here that's going to fit me.
It's hard. It's almost impossible. And I wear a 42 coat.
Mm-hmm.
It took me forever to find my class A's, and then
I know you're feeling. I was the dickhead always at the USO shows with the class B with my M1 jacket from what Price Glory wherever I got, and finally I searched forever and ever. I finally found some guy got out of the hobby on eBay, and I got his Eisenhower jacket, and it actually fit me. Of course, it makes me have to keep my weight off because I'm 6 foot five, and people are like, just get double XL. It's like, well, then it looks like a maternity shirt. I'm not big. I'm long. And so if you go 2X, even in modern day clothes, like, oh, just get a 2X t-shirt. I'm not pregnant. I don't need it to drape off me. I wish they just make things 5 inches, 6 inches longer, but they don't. And it's so frustrating.
It's challenging. You know, that's why us tall guys, you know, there's only so many impressions we can do so fast because it takes so long to find the kit.
We have an acronym for guys like you and me on the field.
Yeah.
FOS. First one shot. Because we're so damn tall. You can see us from across the battlefield.
Man, that actually happened. We were at an event here in North Carolina, and I was in a wheat field taking some shots, and I came up real fast. And an M1 was pointed right at me, man. Oh, my God. It was like from here to – it was like 10 feet away. And talk about trying to stop him real quick.
Oh yeah. Well, I see you proudly standing on the deck of a battleship wearing your Victory Productions T-shirt and your Navy impression. How hard is it? I've done one. Well, I've done it three times. But in Tampa Bay, we have the USS American Victory. It's a Liberty ship. And they'll go out and actually – it actually goes, and they'll take it out and tour the Tampa Bay, and they'll go and shoot blanks off at Tampa and Ybor City. And they usually have six or seven reenactors on there because they don't want to inundate the civilians who pay to be on there, but they want them to have the feeling. But being 6 foot five, walking through a Liberty ship from 1938, 1942, it is a head trauma waiting to happen. It's so tight.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was actually my first event. On the battleship, and I'm just joined the LHC, the Living History Crew, and we do pretty much 4 to 5 events a year. But talking about going through those doors, oh my God, I came home with cuts all and bruises all over my shins, and I didn't hit my head, but it hit my shins all the time. So,
The thing you don't think about either is we're walking around with our M1s on our shoulder. Yeah. And the barrel would constantly get snagged on bulkheads. So it's like I had to flip it upside down just so I wouldn't damage my barrel and then like kind of lower my shoulder, not to mention having a haversack on. I'm looking at another one of your photos, and the reason I bring this up is Henry and I were discussing this on the YouTube video that we're shooting. We're talking about in the Pacific when they're loading up in the landing craft. They look up and you see the naval officer in the window with the big helmet on, and I see you wearing a radio helmet. How big is that thing? And do you feel like Darth Helmet from Spaceballs when you wear it?
We have a video.
Yeah. Once I put that sucker on, man, everybody was making Lord Helmet comments. It was great. I'm surrounded by assholes.
How many assholes do we have here? Hey.
But it's pretty big. I mean, it you know, comes out about that far, and it's big enough for you to put a headset on.
How does it have a liner, or is the webbing just riveted to the inside of that thing? What's the logistics of that thing?
It's kind of cool. It's just pretty much three foam pads, and like they're right here, and then one goes right across, and then it has a little slot and two holes for your headset to go down in.
Oh, cool.
It's really cool, and it's very, very comfortable. It's actually really comfortable. I wore it for about an hour.
Is that the same chin strap that's on the airborne helmet, or is it different?
Yeah, pretty much the same. It's a little different at the top because it connects to two leather bands up at the top, like through these little metal hooks.
Yeah, I'm looking at the close-up of it now.
Yeah, but the chin strap itself is pretty similar. Yeah.
Now, the opposite of me and Joe, Patrice, I'm sure you have no problems at all fitting into original uniforms and probably have just the run of it when you come across them.
Yeah, I would say about 90% of my kits are 100% original.
You suck so bad.
But that's also because I'm like 5'2 and like pretty average size for a woman. Now, dresses and other like more feminine things are tough because they were just so small.
Mm-hmm.
I am not that small of a woman, but short. I'm short.
When John one time he gave me a museum closed down, I gave him a bunch of uniforms, and he knew I was in Marine Corps stuff. So he gave me an original Eisenhower jacket and trousers that were made in Melbourne, Australia. Actually, I had Melbourne, Australia, but the things wouldn't fit me. They sat in my closet for like 2 years, and when I went out to Texas to the National Museum Pacific War, I just donated them. I'm like, these things are just going to sit in my closet. I'd rather you guys do something with them because there's no way they would fit me, and it was a shame, but I happily gave it up. So when did you guys decide that let's take our photography? Have you guys turned it into a company? You got an LLC and everything, or you guys going down that route, or is it more of a hobby thing?
We definitely do a lot of freelance stuff. We don't really have an LLC per se, but we kind of carry it through. And then I am a web designer and a graphic designer and a photographer and everything else under the designer umbrella, it seems like these days. So I carry Victory's name through a lot of different designs that I do, you know, sure. Whether it be digital designs or the photography or, you know, web or anything like that. So, for now, I think it's fine with just the amount of work that we get compensated for. We don't really need an LLC. The overall goal, it would be nice, you know, at some point for this to become much bigger and this be something that we can kind of do as our like main gig. Yeah. But for right now, it's a side gig, and we're okay with that. We have our daily 9-to-5s that we go to, and you know, just like I said, being able to hang out with the guys and also kind of just be creative with the photography and the art. It's been awesome.
Okay, Joe, I'm going to push you in the corner for another 20 minutes. We're going to do 20 minutes on WordPress. iThemes, good thing or bad? And let's talk about why you don't want to change your domain name in your WordPress configuration file. Thanks, Mike. I got that fixed for you. Have you guys ever maybe thought about going from photography into video? Maybe shooting videos and editing that, or is your passion strictly in still frame photography?
We've actually just started trying video. The last Conneaut this past year, we shot some footage. And so we're kind of thinking about diving into that.
That's on my bucket list. Believe it or not, from the age of second grade until 2001, I lived in Ohio. But I was not a reenactor, and I never went there. And now I'm all the way down and almost damn near the tip of Florida. And it's like, I want to go so bad. I'm hoping to go next year, but it's like, just to travel alone, if I drove, I'd have to take like an extra 3 days off of work just because of how far I am. But I know that's everybody's great. But hopefully next year I finally make it up there, especially since World War II armor is up there and everybody else I know from down here. But that is one of my bucket list items.
Oh, yeah. Definitely being the 80th next year.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, because you kind of between the big anniversaries, you kind of chase the dragon a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the 75th was humongous, and then it seemed like onward, then COVID happened, and then it just kind of, the numbers started getting low, but next year is supposed to be huge.
Well, as we said before, you got Band of Brothers, it's like number 8 on Netflix, Pacific's number 1, and then we got Masters of the Air coming out. I mean, you talk about a new interest in World War II, and then for whatever reason, they always do it in August, the hottest part of Ohio, but that's fine. So hopefully by August, I mean, you're probably going to see a whole new flood of audience members, let alone new reenactors up there.
Yeah. And Patrice here, she did some designs for the Normandy anniversary over in France.
Nice.
We'll probably go into that next year too.
Yeah, we have a connection through a company that's actually doing the jumps. And
which one? Round Canopy?
Aero Limited.
Okay.
So they're doing flights like from England over to Normandy and then doing jumps the whole time at some airspace outside of outside of where the beaches are. And, they put a call out for some designs and I thought I'd try my hand and they picked mine. So,
well, I mean, that's where you kind of have the added value. Not only are you a photographer, not only do you have the experience with the digital imaging, the filters and the Photoshop, but you're actively participating in the hobby. And every time you show up, your eye for detail and for, you know, authenticity just improves just like anything else. And so it would make sense not only to get somebody who's damn good at photography, but is also in the hobby as well, versus just some freelancer who is good at taking photos of everything under the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one aspect that our friend who is actually the head photographer, for that company, that he said, he was like, you know, you really paid attention to just like all of the details, just, where I think a designer that's maybe not as in tune with the history of it might not go that far. And that's just, yeah, one of the things we kind of pride ourselves on is, you know, even when we shoot at big events like Conneaut, we spend all that extra time taking out all of the stuff that isn't correct,
yeah,
where most people won't do that. Now we do get a lot of comments about, when is our photo going to go, you know, and we're like, hey, you know, like, give us some time. Like, we have real jobs also, so. But that's kind of part of it. It's just because, like, you know, we don't want to put this representation out there that we don't feel like really encompasses all of the wet, like, sweat and effort that these guys have put in also, because, I mean, like you said, just like the uniforms alone cost so much money, and then some of these guys are just so into it that, you know, they want to do everything exactly as authentic as they possibly can. And, you know, why would we cut that short and
leave a
cell phone in the photo or something like that?
There's been so, like, I'll set up GoPros. I'll like hide them at events, and I'll try to, for my YouTube channel, or, you know, I've seen people who have great photos, and then there's always that one dickhead in the back, got his iPhone out, full uniform. It's like, dude, stop. Oh, yeah.
Or the infamous line of Porta-Johns in the background.
Yeah, or the you know, the Tesla in the back corner. You know, that there's an event coming up November. It's in Fort Morgan, Alabama. It's the 80th anniversary of Tarawa. And the beautiful thing about Fort Morgan is, as the name implies, it's an actual fort. And as it's from World War, actually Civil War-ish. They used it in World War I. But it's surrounded by a berm, and it's on a peninsula. And it's one of the only events I've been to because it's surrounded by a berm, with the exception of the public restroom that's just brown brick out in the distance. All the cars and everything's parked on the other side of the berms. And so, and the uniform standards are super strict. And when I was there for Peleliu and Tarawa, Peleliu actually got the right of landing craft, so that was awesome. Nice. But you wake up in the morning and you look around, and it's nothing but authentic tents. Guys in the uniforms, you don't see the cars, you don't have the hot dog vendor blaring EDM music in the corner, none of that. It's all just sounds, and you hear the flapping of the tents, the, you know, people's equipment banging on them, and it's like the most authentic thing, because the way the layout is, you can actually go without seeing cars all week long. It's great.
Yeah.
And it's so few and far between. Patrice, let me ask you this. Maybe it doesn't affect you so much because your friends, your social circle, probably are like-minded when it comes to the arts. But I see nowadays it's probably easier for younger cats to get involved because they grew up with, I blame everything on the Big Bang Theory, everything from skinny jeans to multicolored Vans at people who've never stepped foot on skateboard wear, but that's besides the point. Because they popularized and made it acceptable for people to participate in Comic-Con, the idea of wearing silly uniforms on the weekend for younger cats isn't that far stretched. For people like us, Gen Xers, people who grew up in the 70s and 80s, and for our kind of, I remember like 10 years ago when I got started, people are like, you dress up and do what on the weekends? So do people you know kind of look at you like, what are you guys doing on the weekend? Or are they just kind of, oh, that's cool, accept it, and you don't worry too much about it?
Well, Joe makes it pretty well known that that's what we're going to be doing on the weekend. So usually I just go along with whatever he has to say about it. But yeah, I mean, you know, from time to time we get that